Welcome to University Matters. This is Patricia Camilleri, Director of Communications and Alumni Relations here at the University of Malta. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research projects, their international networks, about their aims and aspirations. I shall also be hearing from staff and students and visitors to campus about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. Delighted to have with me this morning on University Matters, Dr. Engineer Nicholas Sumbolt. Nicholas is CEO of MCST, the Malta Council for Science and Technology, and he also lectures here at the university. So just a few words about my guest. He graduated in electrical engineering in 2003 and promptly pursued postgraduate studies at the European Organization for Nuclear Research, better known, I think, as CERN, specializing in instrumentation and control techniques for nuclear applications. He gained access to an infrastructure of 25 million euros to complete his research and hence successfully defended his PhD in 2006 at the age of 25, very young, I might say. His research results provided a core control system that is critical for the functioning of the 6.5 billion euro LHC project, that's Large Hadron Collider, which I know he'll be telling us more about later. He has more than 25 international publications and collaborated with specialists from over 17 countries. He's pursued postdoctoral research and then worked as a research engineer at the LHC until returning to Malta in 2009, when he started to chair the new board of the Malta Council for Science and Technology, MCST. In 2010, as I said, he was appointed CEO and is also vice chairman of the board. He's won numerous awards for distinctions throughout his studies, including an award for placing first in Malta in public examinations. He was also the administrative executive of a young enterprise company that won the overall competition. Junior Chamber International has honoured Dr. Sumbolt with an award for leadership in academia and another one for scientific and technological development. He was honoured with the Maltese Outstanding Young Person of the Year Award in 2008. Dr. Sumbolt was also awarded the Johnny Walker Man of the Year Award in 2009. Welcome to the programme.
Thank you for the invitation.
Well, that sounds like a lot of work has gone on in these years, and all very, very fascinating. And we're looking forward to hearing about this CERN, which has been in the news so much over the last years. So my first question to you really is about CERN. I mean, what is CERN and this LHC, this wonderful machine?
Well, in 1954, so just 9 years after the Second World War, the scientists in Europe had recognized that most of the scientific community in Europe had dwindled. Well, many of the scientists had gone to the United States, many of them were wounded or dead, and for the scientists to regain the former prestige, they had proposed that UNESCO to set up a laboratory in Switzerland that was aimed at generating peace amongst the countries and having scientists work together again under one roof on one common project, so that they forget the differences that they have between them. And this was the idea of setting up CERN. It was a council, it started as a council, that is why I can't say European Polar Research Nuclear, that is how CERN gets its name, an acronym which it eventually retained. And it was a very special organization because we had people from the UK, Italy, France and Germany working together on a nuclear project, something that is completely fundamental, as in the complete core of science, that would not have any form of political connotation. So it was basically having scientists work together to try to forget their differences by working on something which they commonly loved, which is the basics of science.
And at the moment, it's in Geneva. Was it always in Switzerland?
Yes, it was always in Geneva, and it was purposely set up on the border of France and Switzerland to show its international standpoint. In fact, it is a really special organization because it was set up before the European Union. So you could see how what foresight the scientists had at the time in setting up an organization of this caliber with that kind of political collaboration. At the moment, there are 20 member states that fund the organization with about 600 million euros per year. But there are many more than that that collaborate. There are another 60, so in total it's more than 80 countries who collaborate, donate, or in some form set up consortiums for the different parts of the experiments that are done at CERN. Our flagship project, there are others, but our flagship project is the Large Hadron Collider, the LHC, which is known to be the largest and most powerful scientific instrument ever constructed by mankind. It is an accelerator, a particle accelerator, which basically accelerates particles. Now, a particle is a very tiny constituent of matter. It accelerates them, collides them head-on, and by colliding them, it would regenerate the same conditions, or approximately or close to the same conditions, that we had at the very beginning of our universe, that we had in the Big Bang.
This collider goes in a ring around Geneva.
That's right.
If I've understood correctly.
It's 100 meters underground, crossing the border of France and Switzerland four times. And it's circular, yes, so you get particles accelerating around this circle and then colliding head-on in four primary locations, which we call detectors. There are four detectors, one is called ATLAS, the other one is called CMS, and the other is ALICE, and then we've got LHCb, or LHC Beauty. These are the four detectors, and that is where we get your explosion, if you wish, or collision, of the particles, and then from these collisions you break the particles into smaller constituents with different properties, and from that you figure out what the particles were made of. So it's, in a general sense, you could consider it to be a massive microscope.
And it has to be that large because you need the speed.
You need, in fact, we already reached the speed of light, that is the maximum speed, that or approach the speed of light, that is the maximum speed that according to Einstein, is possible in the universe. But we increase the energy tremendously. So up to energies that we have never had before on those scales. Now, when we speak about the particle, I can explain what a particle more or less is. Everybody knows more or less how large a meter is. Now, if you take a meter and you divide it into 1,000, you get a millimeter. Now, if you get the millimeter and you divide that into 1,000, you get a micrometer. Now, if you divide that again into 1,000, you get a nanometer. You divide again into 1,000, you get a picometer. And if you divide that again into 1,000, you get a femtometer. And that is how big a particle more or less is. It's about one femtometer, and we are looking at this scale to understand what nature is made of at that scale. It is an exceedingly important experiment, an exceedingly important fundamental principle, because if we understand what matter is made of at the very foundations, we will be able to have a science that is much more powerful. And from that, you'll be able to get technology that is much more powerful. Just to give you an example, there was a scientist in the 1800s known as Michael Faraday. He's very well known. He had discovered the principle of electromagnetic induction. Basically, one of the effects of this principle is that if you do something with certain apparatus on one side of the table, on the other side of the table, you might be picking up a signal without having a wire between them. So that is, if you wish, a kind of wireless communication. I'm being oversimplistic, but that is more or less the principle. And a politician had come to see him. He had eventually become the prime minister, in fact. And the politician had asked him, so, as a scientist, you've discovered this fantastic thing, okay, but what are we going to use this for? And you can imagine in the 1800s there was no electricity, no cars, no planes, no mobile phones, no internet, no motors, nothing, right? And Michael Faraday didn't really know what the application was going to be, but he knew it was a really fundamentally important concept for science. So his reply to that question was, what are we going to use this principle for? Was, well, sir, he said, I don't really know what we're going to use this for, but I can assure you that you're going to tax it one day. And in fact, if you look at our economy, it is based primarily on that principle, because he had discovered a fundamental building block of electromagnetic theory, which is the principle of electricity. So all electricity came out of that. All communications, mobile phones, computers, motors. So most of the technology that we have today is based on the electromagnetic theory that he had discovered. And that is in fact the same kind of experiments that we are doing at CERN. Since then we have, well, our theories claim that there are four forces, one of them being electromagnetism, the same one that Michael Faraday had found out or discovered. But there are another three. One is gravity, we all know about it, but it's the least one that we know about scientifically because it is very weak. You need something the size of the world to have a force that pulls you down, like gravity does. And then there are another two fundamental forces. They are nuclear forces, known as the strong nuclear force and the weak nuclear force. And there's a theory known as grand unified theory that somehow gets these four forces and assumes or thinks that they are the one manifestation of the same force. And that is the kind of thing that we're doing at CERN. We're trying to understand the basics, the fundamentals, so that we will build a science that is much more powerful and a technology that is much more robust. I mean, you can imagine science being like a hotel. You have a very good foundation, otherwise your hotel cannot go so high. So if you've got a very good foundation, you'll be able to have a hotel that is strong. And at the very bottom we've got the language of science, which is mathematics, you could say, and then on that you've got physics, and then chemistry, and then biology, and then all the other things that come with them. And understanding the particles, so the very tiny constituents of matter, is like understanding what the hotel is made of, like the small bricks that hotel is made of. Now if you need to build an arch, and you can only have bricks that are small cubes or shapes that are coming from a rectangular form, you can only have an arch that is in blocks, so it won't be a nice curved arch. But if you have bricks that are much smaller, you would have an arch that is much more round. And that is why it is important for us to understand the very fundamentals and the very, very small, because from the very, very small you'll be able to build the very, very large.
Obviously, there are many, many researchers working in CERN, but there are people contributing their little bit to the whole. And your little bit as a researcher?
Yes. So my little bit, in fact, I was very fortunate because it was an integral system in the machine. The machine accelerates particles around the Large Hadron Collider, and for that we need superconducting magnets. Now, each superconducting magnet of about 7 Tesla, which is 40,000 times the magnetic field that we have here on Earth. And these magnets, each one costing more than a Ferrari, there are about 7,000 of them around the whole machine, 1,800 of them being relatively large, about 15 meters large and 30 tons heavy. They are superconducting in that they are cooled down to -271 degrees centigrade. That is much colder than the average temperature of the universe. I mean, imagine if you go to Siberia, you get a temperature of -30, -40, maybe -50 or -60 if you've got wind shear. But these are cooled down to -271 degrees centigrade because the electricity inside them is supposed to see no resistance whatsoever, so that we get a very strong magnetic field. Anyway, so I had found a way of controlling these complex superconducting magnets, correcting for their effects, so that we can guide all the particles around the machine. So basically, without this contribution, it would have been a real problem for the machine to even start, moreover, to control the particles up to the energy that we need. I had presented them with a couple of ideas on how to solve this problem. I was chosen. They even gave me the opportunity to use all the equipment that I needed to perform this research. And at the end, I managed to find a way in which I could control the whole machine using these superconducting magnets to guide the particles around. And in fact, when we started the machine for the first time in 2007, I was right there in the control room to make sure that my system worked properly. It was like a really big triumphant success, and it was, I think, one of the nicest points in my career, because when you see so much hard work put into it, I mean, I remember working day and night and weekends as well, because our deadlines were really stringent and I really wanted to show what Maltese people can do. And it was a real satisfaction to be there and to see that the machine was working as intended.
A tense moment before you actually...
Well, of course, you can imagine. I remember the night before, checking till about 2 o'clock in the morning, every single magnet, one after the other, one bit by bit, to make sure that we didn't do some error or I didn't do something. Of course, you always have that kind of responsibility. Yeah? When the push comes to shove, you've got to be there to make sure that it really does work. Because theoretically, it's one thing, but in practice, it's very easy that somebody would have crossed some wires or switched something and you wouldn't have realized and it wouldn't have worked as planned. So, but it worked much better than we intended, in fact. So we had commissioned part of one of the rings, because there are two counter-rotating rings, in just under 1 hour, and the second counter-rotating ring just over 1 hour. So it was really fantastic. Unfortunately, a couple of days later, we were doing other tests, because that was the beginning of the machine. That was the starting point, like the first time we accelerated particles in it. But we had another 2 years of experiments and of tests to reach to nominal energy. And many tests got on well, but one of the tests did not. And we had to shut down the machine for a number of months to fix the problem and get back online. We have managed to get back online, and since then we have reached up to half the full energy of the machine, which is fantastic. We have already started to see new physics coming out, new indications of supersymmetry, but of course these are preliminary stages. We've got a whole experimental plan of about 10 years. I mean, controlling a machine of that magnitude, imagine, it's 27 kilometers in circumference. That is the distance between Chirkeu and Marsashlok. So can you imagine going to one side of the machine? Oh my goodness, I forgot my screwdriver. Let me go back. So you can imagine the scale of the machine and the logistics needed to operate it.
You've spoken about the satisfactions of your research actually coming to fruition, so to speak, and that must be great, obviously, for a scientist, and you were a young guy doing your PhD amongst a lot of other scientists who were perhaps more experienced than you were at that time. It must also have been an experience on the human level, making friends, leaving Malta, being in Geneva, this sort of iconic city, being in an iconic scientific milieu. What do you feel you gained out of it on the human level?
Well, ever since I was a child, I always dreamed of participating in some form of scientific discovery or in some form of technological feat. I was always inspired by the way the universe works. Physics was my subject, and I loved it. I used to read physics even before going to bed. And something that people might not understand, but I was really curious to understand these things. I don't know. It was always my dream. So you can imagine when I was accepted to go there, it was something that was unbelievable. I just couldn't, of course, believe that it was actually happening. I used to pinch myself a couple of times before leaving. And being there, of course, is a fantastic experience. I mean, you see Nobel laureates everywhere, speak to them on a first-name basis. I mean, my office was right under Professor Carlo Rubbia, who was Director General of CERN and who had won the Nobel Prize. I mean, you get to understand these people, the way they think is completely different, really ambitious, really focused, with the kind of penetration that you really don't see in many people, and the kind of foresight. And, of course, being in that environment, which is really conducive to intellectual thought, even the libraries, imagine, it's open 24 hours a day, and you even see people using it all the time. I mean, it is unbelievable. And even, of course, on a social level, it is an international organization, so you automatically find yourself with people from so many diverse cultures, not only European, but from all over the world. And you end up going to pubs and dancing and discos, of course, because Geneva has its own nightlife, especially in summer. And of course, in the setting of Geneva, there are the United Nations, so it is really a fantastic experience. And we have had since then 15 students from the University of Malta, because we had set up a collaboration. 15 students from there, from the university, went up for some student courses, and they all say what a fantastic experience it is.
The Maltese researchers and the young people listening to you speak who could aspire to being scientists, what would you like to say to them, really? I mean, you've obviously got an awful lot out of this already, mm-hmm. even though you're still a young man.
Mm-hmm. Well, primarily, and this is not only for scientists, dream as much as you can. Don't let anybody tell you, it will never happen or it's impossible. Dream as much as you can, but then work as much as you can to actually get there.
There are no shortcuts to that, really.
And there, I mean, no, you have got to put your mind to it. You either decide to do it or you don't. And I had decided to do it, and it was very difficult. Mind you, I mean, I used to spend a lot of time trying to solve certain problems, and then after a couple of months, then you finally find a solution, or you find a way of going around it, or some form of other. But it does involve a lot of hard work. Any success requires that. There's always an element of luck, but then you also have to be good enough to see certain opportunities. So dream as much as you can. If you can dream it, you can do it. And don't listen to people who tell you it's difficult or it's impossible. Of course it's going to be difficult. It's a challenge. This is why it's worth doing.
Exactly.
Otherwise, why should you do it if it is so easy? Everybody can do it if it is that easy.
Now you're here, now you're in Malta. Obviously, you're CEO of MCST, which I'm sure takes up a lot of your time.
Of course.
But I presume you have not left your researcher's cap
hanging
behind the door.
No, of course not. I'm still working now to perfectionize some of the systems of the control, because as the energy goes up, certain specifications become much more stringent. So I would need to control the particles in a much more stringent way. I am in constant contact, in fact, with my team at CERN, and we also have some people who are working on their PhDs now under my supervision on the same project, like working on what I am working on. We also are going to have a CERN workshop in Malta. This is in collaboration with the university, because I lecture at the university too, within the Faculty of ICT, and we have managed to even get some European funding for support, and the workshop is going to be looking at the upgrading of the machine, so it's going to be called the Malta workshop, in fact. Something which is really prestigious for Malta, and the Malta workshop, the first time they are officially
Excellent.
Going to be talking about the upgrade of the LHC. And these are my peers. I mean, we have worked together. I was at CERN for 6 years. I am still affiliated, of course, and I carry on with my research. In fact, I am finalizing one of my publications. And of course, my goal is to try and show local scientists what a fantastic experience it was, and to also do the same in their respective fields. I mean, if you look at the European perspective, there are many organizations, maybe not as large as CERN, but that also have a lot of Well, they are a focus point of scientific research and scientific investment in terms of human capital and capacity, and also in terms of funding and equipment. If you look at the life sciences, for example, there's the European Molecular Biology Laboratory. Of course, anything that's got to do with space technology, there's the European Space Agency. They have 3 billion euros per year in funding, which is really, really quite a bit. And there are about 30 others. So
there are lots of opportunities out there for people who really want to go for it.
And of course, since I was at CERN, I've got a network around all Europe in most of these organizations, and it is my ambition to get collaborations with as many of them as possible with Malta. We are starting up. It is obviously a laborious process, but I think we're doing quite well. The CERN one, of course, is the one that I had a lot of contact with, is working very well. And now we are looking at others. Last year, the council managed to get people from the European Molecular Biology Laboratory, so we're working on that. We also got people from the European Space Agency last year, and we are following up. It takes time, but slowly and surely.
In the last minute that we have, because our time has passed very quickly, you are, as CEO of MCST, involved in the organization of the Science Festival, and that will be coming up on campus at university. Perhaps you could just say a couple of words about the sort of rationale behind doing this Science
sure,
Festival.
Sure. So actually it is on October 25th to 31st of October, and we plan to have many activities. This is science popularization for children. The aim of the council is, of course, to enthuse kids to go, and our students to go for the sciences. We are going to have many exhibits on site. These exhibits are like toys that the children can play, and whilst they are playing and enjoying it, they can also learn a scientific principle. We're also going to have scientific clowns doing shows, but always with a science perspective. We're going to have jugglers and fire eaters. We're going to have robot wars. That's on the Saturday 30th at 2 o'clock on site, where the university students have built these robots and they will be fighting against each other, just like what we see on international television. We're going to have night stargazing activities, visits of the labs, talks. I mean, the works. Last year it was really, really successful.
It was a great success. I enjoyed myself hugely, I have to admit, going around the stand. Well, that's our time come to an end now. I'd just like to thank Dr. Engineer Nicholas Samwoot for coming to talk to us today.
It was my pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to today's programme. I do hope you can join us again next week for another in the series University Matters on Campus FM. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.